The Family Ties Podcast is a fresh and new series created and curated by two sisters, Kelly Ritchie and myself, Julia Avery, on opposite sides of the United States. We want to share our journey of staying connected through the weekly discussion of topics that both affect and inspire us.
These topics range from arts and entertainment, inspirational women and role models, science, global issues, psychology, life experiences, pet peeves, etc. Distance may keep us apart, but family ties creates the perfect backdrop to remain connected, challenged, and always learning. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to The Family Ties. This is
Welcome back.
Yeah, this is episode, what, three, Julia?
Yeah.
So that's Julia. This is Kelly.
Numero tres.
Yes. Today we're actually going to be talking about an inspirational woman. Let me disclaim this by also saying that I put the dogs outside the room because they seemed antsy, but one of them is currently scratching at the door. So if things get out of hand, I'll have to let her in. But just know that that's what that sound is. We're still deep into COVID-19, guys. We're all just going crazy.
Well, the dogs are going to be a constant problem when it comes to our episodes.
Yes.
Because they're in the house regardless of COVID-19 or not.
Yeah, so let's introduce our animals, Julia, just real quick. So I have...
You mean our furry fam.
Our furry family. These are my children. You can't see them, but I'm gesturing outside the room. Maisie. She is a mixed lab. She kind of looks like a lab and a whippet. She is like 14 years old and the angel of my life. She's always
she's
quiet.
So cute.
She's perfect. And then Aria, my little bitch poo. She's a Bichon and poodle mix. She looks real poodly right now. She got a bath last night and she's about two years old. And then there's Penny, my little Bichon Shih Tzu. I rescued her. So I didn't pay anything for this really expensive dog for Thomas for Valentine's Day. And she
Score.
Is adorable. Okay.
She's so freaking cute.
We'll post pictures.
I haven't gotten to meet her or Arya yet. And I'm really upset about that. Like, legitimately upset about that. My furry fam, I've got Lux here in the room with me. She's turning 8 this year. She is a mix between a Jack Russell and a Papillon. A Jackie Pap. Is that what you'd call it? Or a Pappy Jack?
I don't know, but I like that a lot.
It's probably a Pappy Jack. She is so cute. She loves to play. As she's gotten older, she gets hot really fast. And so she'll like just sit there and pant and look at you like, help me. I need to get a fan for her.
Yeah. And we'll take some pictures of them and try and post them on the website so everybody can see them because they are adorable.
Yes.
It's just
it's
ridiculous.
Very important you all know about them. Yes. I also have two cats. They're equally as important as Lux, okay? Kelly's not a fan of cats. But I love all animals, okay? All animals. And my kitties, Kendrick Lamar, mama kitty. She's the sweetest. She loves cuddling. She will, like, if you stand up and you pick her up, she'll get onto your shoulders and sit up there like a parrot. So cute. And she'll purr. She loves it. And then there's her son, Ralphie. I didn't name him Ralphie. Skylar, it fits them though. Like you look at them and you're like, yeah, it's a Ralphie. Whatever, it works. Anyway, Ralphie, I think he's like Forrest Gump. He's a little bit, he's not 100% with everybody else. If that makes sense. He's a little slower. He's also sweet. And I think he's gay. We'll talk about that another time. Anyway.
Intro's out of the way. What are we talking about today, Julia?
We are talking about a wonderful woman who's like seriously inspires us. I would be amazed if I accomplished half of what she's accomplished at her age.
Amen.
Really excited to talk about her today. I'll let Kelly do her intros because Kelly did some amazing research and I'm excited to hear about all of it.
Well, basically, let's just start this by, I'm gonna kind of copy what you said, Julia, but like every once in a while, guys, like someone comes along who not only beats all of the odds, they stand for something bigger than themselves, surpass others who are kind of their own age in wisdom, passion, and foresight. So like this description is even too simplistic, I think, for the wonderful woman we are discussing today, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Woo!
Woo! I did most of my research using Wikipedia, which really had an extensive amount of information. So I'll be quoting a lot of their stats and facts. So let's just credit them for doing my research for me. She is only 30 years old, 2 years younger than me. She took office at the tender age of 29.
She's real, guys.
She's the youngest woman ever to serve in the U.S. Congress. Attended Boston University, which the university, I kind of looked it up because I was curious as to like if it was super swanky. No, it seems about average. It's ranked like 40th among undergraduate programs at national universities and 46th among the global universities. So it's not like Yale or Harvard. We all know she was a waitress and bartender before her big run for Congress. She is a member of the Democratic Socialists of America. I looked it up, and it's basically an organization of Democratic Socialists, social democratic, and labor-oriented members in the U.S. that fight for reform today that will weaken the power of corporations and increase the power of working people. Amen. So how, you ask, how does this happen? So their goal is to decrease the influence of money in politics, empower ordinary people in workplaces within the economy, and restructure gender and cultural relationships to be more equitable. And she advocates a progressive platform that includes Medicare for All, federal jobs guarantee, which aims at providing a sustainable solution to problem of inflation and unemployment. And it aims to create like full employment and price stability by having the state promise to hire unemployed workers as an employer of last resort. She supports the Green New Deal, abolishing ICE, free public college and trade school. And she also supports a 70% marginal tax rate for incomes above $10 million. She grew up in Bronx, and both parents are of Puerto Rican descent. After college, she moved back to the Bronx and took a bartending and waitressing job after her dad died to help her mom fight foreclosure on their home. And then in addition, like, I mean, this lady is incredible. In addition to launching the now defunct Brook Avenue Press, it's a publishing firm for books portraying the Bronx in a positive light. She has, one, worked for the nonprofit National Hispanic Institute, two, worked as an organizer for Bernie Sanders' 2016 presidential run. Three, has visited places in the U.S. affected by the Flint water crisis and Dakota Access Pipeline, and she continues to fight for the disenfranchised. So, I mean, needless to say, her surprising grassroots victory over the 10-term incumbent Joe Crowley was just the beginning of her now well-documented rise to fame, power, and notoriety. She was featured in that moving Netflix release called Knock Down the House. It's a powerful documentary about four female Democrats running for office who were not career politicians. So it just kind of, it's a really moving documentary. So I highly recommend it. One other thing I'd say is that the Young Turks, I don't know if you still listen to them, Julia, but they're the holy grail of like honest news reporting in a world where news has become just so politically polarized, become a cesspool of misinformation.
Yeah, the news isn't news anymore. It's no. Just propaganda, and it's just fear-mongering, and it's hard to find a real news source.
Well, and I mean, TYT is definitely left-leaning, but it is so seriously, like, done to be as fair as possible. And I like to listen to the Damage Report. Shout out to John Iadarola. It holds a very close place in my heart. It's the only source of news that kind of makes me feel any better. So the last little tidbit I'll mention is that her social media game is very strong. So even though recently she's been minimizing her social media usage, I didn't know this. I thought I was the trendsetter, but whatever. She was quoted as saying that social media is a public health issue. I agree.
Completely agree. And I was just talking with someone else last night about it. Social media use with government workers in general. I feel like people who hold a federal office should not have, I'm not saying that their freedom to use social media should be taken away, but I do not like how arguments and catty remarks are made to other people in office, opposing members of office, on Twitter or social media. I feel like it's super petty, it's super catty, and I lose respect for the people who are just sitting there tweeting at other people and like hashtag this, hashtag that, oh, you're so weak or whatever. And it's like, it's easy to throw insults online. What I want to see is you making changes in office, in law reform. I want to see action. I don't want to see you bickering on the internet.
Right. or trying to ruin or smear others. Yeah. So I think let's take a quick moment to talk about her social media presence. Did you pick out some of your favorite social media moments of hers, Julia? Did you get that far?
No, because that, again, social media stuff does not impact me the same as it does others. I don't have a lot of respect for it. So just because I feel like it's not as passionate or real tangible for me, because it's easy to just sit there and message something on your phone and upload it to the internet just like a click away versus actions. So I'm not inspired by savvy remarks or whatever, so that doesn't impact me the same way. So no, I didn't do that.
Well, let's talk about things that you find most inspirational about her.
Because she's in a position of leadership, I wanted to kind of talk about the things that mean the most about leaders to me and how it ties into what she's demonstrated for herself. And that's super important, because I don't feel as if a lot of people in leadership roles are leaders. They are in the position and they do what they think they need to be doing, but I don't think that everybody fits a leadership role the same. Or correctly.
Or could have somebody who started for the right reasons, but now, because they've accepted so much PAC money, super PAC money, and money from other corporations, mm-hmm. they are having to stick up for those corporate interests.
Yeah.
So they're tainted by this. I think our whole political system is tainted by political interests that are made by corporations. So the reason, you know, you have so much pollution and the can't get away from fossil fuels is because the fossil fuel industry has elected that, you know, just like the Koch brothers, they are so far into it that they're able to put money into the person who is going to look out for their interests.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the ultimate quid pro quo. So
agreed.
I'll buy you this, you know, I'll give you money if you will stick up for me and, you know, my interests. So The minute we can get money out of, like, corporate money
mm-hmm.
out of the political system, it's, to me, it's just as important as getting rid of religious interests.
I completely agree.
You know, we need to have such an overhaul, and the reason Bernie is our answer is because he knows. He's been talking about this since before either of us were born, so I think she realizes that too. AOC, like, fighting for him, he actually is what she quoted as the reason she decided to run for office, is because he inspired her with his grassroots movement and his genuine care for those who have the least.
Yeah. And I think it's important to mention, so I've got 3 points that I want to make about what I see in great leaders, and that is selflessness and a personal attachment to the cause, to their fight. For instance, like, you'll have these gentlemen, these older gentlemen that haven't had a very difficult life, so to speak. Like, maybe they've come from a good family, middle class. Maybe they were able to go to college, paid for, whatever. They haven't had to really fight a lot in their past, a lot of hardships. So I don't see a lot of passion coming through with people who come from an easy past. But when you have someone such as AOC who's had to fight a lot in her personal life. Like, for instance, she's always tried to help support her family. And when her father passed, she came back home to help her mom out. And that she's very familiar and had firsthand experience with hardships. And I feel like that is fuel for passion and making positive changes and maintaining your focus on the fight, the right path. So I feel like that's a great aspect of a leader, is somebody who's got a personal fight in this as well.
Well, and not just that, but just being somebody who came from a waitressing background and knowing what it's like to be not only just earning barely minimum wage with tips, they're really astute and know that it's not because they're not working hard or aren't willing to work hard and can't succeed.
It's a hard job.
It's knowing that you can be smart, you can be all of these things that could be successful, but some people have better opportunities than others. And being aware that kind of like that stupid thing that Kevin sent me the other day about how the right thinks that we're all Democrats are all lazy and just want to live off of government help and support. Let me read this because I don't find it funny. I don't find it clever. But he said there was quote unquote this joke. And it says, COVID-19 has me acting like a Democrat, sitting at home, not working, complaining about everything, and waiting on my government check. Now,
I've never received a government check before.
No,
I'm a Democrat. I work.
If somebody told me that's what being a Democrat was, like, why have I been working all this time? Why have I been busting my tail, like, since I was 12?
Exactly. Wow, I missed the memo.
Yeah, I totally missed that memo. I didn't know that I was in a party of entitled, you just give me the money. So these polarizing things that are associated with each party just continue to get more polarizing. And still not truthful. It's interesting because you think about Bernie and AOC standing up for the working class and how our middle class is disappearing. They are giving us real facts and reasons as to why this is happening. But I also think their stance on not taking corporate money is vital. It is easy because when you find a need, like you're falling behind, you could take that money, but they chose not to. And that stand, I think, has set the precedence for so many other people running for positions in any kind of, in your local government, big government. A lot of them are starting to realize that grassroots movement is the way to go. It is about the voice of the people. And we're not even going to get into the Electoral College, which we're going to talk about, I would say, maybe in the next couple of weeks. We're going to do some research and see where our thoughts on that, you know, are either fact-based or kind of skewed. And we're going to set ourselves straight and others, because I have a serious problem with it, and I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. So that kind of your grassroots points kind of segue into one of my other leadership. The next one is, I think it's super important that leaders understand that their role is in support of the people. They work for the people. The
Not people for don't corporations.
Work, they don't, yeah, they don't work for corporations, and the people don't work for them. So they are not, just because you are a leader does not mean you are in a position to abuse power. That's not leadership.
We're leadership electing is where, them to serve yes, our interests.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's she, and she's got that. Mm-hmm. She's got that down pat. I love that about her because it's so important, that, especially government officials, keeping that in mind, because I feel like they lose their way at some point and they forget that they're working for us. And it's like, we're your boss. I don't know if you remember the dynamics of your job anymore, but like, you do what we say.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that reminds me of this one thing that I think is really impressive about her. I really love the fact that she, on her very first day of congressional orientation, she participated in a climate change protest outside Nancy Pelosi's office. And it's interesting because Nancy Pelosi is a part of her party. And she ended up voting for her to be, you know, reelected as, you know, committee chair. But I think... Mm-hmm. I don't like Nancy Pelosi. I think she has lost touch with what it's like to be an average real person. I don't like her. I'm not a fan. But it looks like AOC isn't afraid. It's not about making friends. She is pushing for what's important. And it doesn't matter if it's holding her own party accountable. And we don't see that a lot. Her and Bernie, to me, are the most non-establishment. Because it's not just about we're sticking up for whatever is important to our party. They're just saying, this is what's important to my constituents and people who voted me in. I am their mouthpiece because that is why I got voted into this position. And, you know, I don't care if you're part of my party. I will host a protest outside of your office. Hold you accountable. That's what we need from our leaders.
You're like doing perfect segues into all of my points.
Oh, good.
My final point was about how leaders push boundaries in the status quo to do what is right, not for what is normal or what is acceptable with society at the moment, but for what is right. And that point you just made perfectly ties in with that. I love it.
Good. And she's part of the squad, what they call the squad. I don't like calling her the squad or as a member of a squad because I think that was a right-wing term to try and make it seem like they're just this bully club of loudmouths who are just trying to wreck everything. So I'm not even going to refer to her in that way. I am aware that that's what people kind of commonly associate with her, but I'm not going to take the bait. She's an individual. Okay. Agreed. There's a whole host of women next to her who are also doing the same things. And we'll talk about them later. But let's just suffice it to say that her brand, hers and Bernie's brand of social awareness and caring for the people has earned them nothing but getting smeared in all the news. Like they're not popular. They're seen as just a distraction when honestly, they're calling out the distractions. And it's... both sides don't like it. It makes them uncomfortable. They just want to keep going as is.
Because they've created their own little box of what they consider, you know, the space that they're allowed to move around inside and as their party. And anybody who tries to go outside their box, they ostracize them. They make them out. They basically host a schmear campaign against them online, using Twitter.
I hate Twitter. Ugh.
Discrediting their platform based upon the fact that they are threatened now, because now they've been called out and they feel threatened. Break that status quo.
Can I be really gauche here and say that there's only one other person in history that I feel like has earned those credentials for themselves? And don't roll over in your graves, people who are dead, but I'm gonna say Jesus. Because, and I'm talking about the Jesus Christ from the scripture, you know, who walked the earth with his disciples. He was not very into money, you know, he was, and it's okay to be wealthy. I think it is just fine to have money. I'm not trying to vilify the rich. But Jesus, he was the ultimate radical.
Isn't there that point in scripture where he goes into the halls and he flips over the tables?
In the temple. Because the temple had been turned into a business place, which is what I think of modern churches. Across the board, it is just a business to make money. It is not about God in the slightest. It is about money in their own interests. And
it's spilled over into politics where it should never have been in the first place. Money nor religion. And now it's combined.
This danger and it's of just pushing disgusting. Against the status quo. Like people who are nice and comfortable and more than have enough. Talking about needing to get rid of taxes on the rich, it is so impossibly ridiculous that they are so out of touch that, okay, let's just use the example.
Can you, just really quickly, can you imagine if the poor suggested they got tax breaks?
Oh, well, I mean, they've
fuck been... a duck. They would, people would lose their goddamn mind. The rich would be like, oh no, oh no. They're working citizens. They need to pay their taxes like everybody else.
So this is a great segue into how this book I've been reading has really helped educate me as to the core issues of when we talk about democratic socialism. It's definitely seen as a very bad thing by Democrats and Republicans alike.
Because they love associating it with communism and not separating the two and not doing their research to even know what it is.
Well, okay, so I'm a democratic socialist, but let's just get this straight. Socialism and democratic socialism are two different things. That sounds confusing, but let's break it down. I've been reading this book called The Nordic Theory of Everything in Search of a Better Life by Anu Partanen. Incredible. She is from Finland, and this book is discussing how Finland has been suddenly reaching this position of their economy is great, their people are really happy, their government programs are fantastic, they're seen as like a really good model. And Bill Clinton, he was interviewing this lady about Finland and why they're all of a sudden hitting the charts and what they're doing differently. We tend to think of Sweden, you know, Norway, all those Nordic countries to be socialists and just dependent on their governments. But she lays it out in such a way that I think is fantastic because she's not supporting socialism either. She's just saying what they have in place is better than what we have. And she says why. So she says, every time I hear an American refer to Finland as a socialist country, However, I feel like I've been suddenly transported back to the 1950s. Finns of my generation and older have a pretty good idea of what socialism is, not to mention communism, having grown up with the Soviet Union right on our doorstep. Our nation fought three brutal wars against socialism in the 20th century to protect our freedom, independence, and free market system. Free market system, to them, is way different than what we consider capitalism. So let's just get it right. A little history. Until the early 20th century, Finland was ruled alternately by Sweden and Russia, but gained its independence in 1917 when the communist revolution in Russia overthrew the czars, creating the soon-to-be Soviet juggernaut. Finland was immediately plunged into a bitter struggle that pitted Finland's own working class, sympathetic to the Russian communist cause, against our own conservative capitalists. In a short but vicious civil war, the free market forces in Finland won, crushing the socialist uprising. Then, when the Soviet Union threatened Finland's independence 2 decades later, Finns beat back socialism both times, preserving Finnish freedom and independence at great sacrifice. Nearly a fifth of Finland's entire population fought against the Soviets, and many more participated as nurses and in other supporting roles. Some 93,000 Finns perished out of a population of 3.7 million. So Here's how we in Finland understand socialism. This is important, guys. This is why I promise I'm reading this for a reason. The government controls production and bans ownership of property. No private factories, companies, or stores, and no free markets. No one is allowed to accumulate any personal riches. There's only one political party, few personal freedoms, and little or no freedom of speech. Socialism is one step away from communism, which Karl Marx defined as a situation in which the government, or indeed the state itself, has become expendable. So the idea that a contemporary Nordic society is anything like this sort of socialism is absurd. The notion that even a liberal American leader such as Barack Obama could be considered a socialist, as some of his conservative critics like to claim, seems to us downright comic. In fact, such stereotypes quickly wear thin for us Finns. The number of Finns who sacrificed their lives fighting socialism and communism in the 20th century is roughly the same as the number of Americans who died in America's two hot wars against communism, Korea and Vietnam. And that's out of a population of 1/60th the size of America's. Over the past 70 years, what the experience of the Nordic nations actually suggests is that even the United States, with its already very impressive commitments to freedom, might actually be able to learn a few things from us about freedom and free market capitalism. So, indeed, what if the entire purpose of the state in the 21st century, as agreed upon and expressly stated by its citizens, was not to take more power away from the people, but just the opposite, to push the modern values of freedom and independence even further, to provide people with a logistical foundation for most comprehensive forms of individual liberty possible. It is exactly this exceptional commitment to individualism that defines the Nordic social contract today. And the result of this approach are plain to see from the Nordic region's rankings in global surveys, not only in quality of life, but in economic dynamism as well. All of the advantages I gave up when I left Finland and moved to America, universal public health care, universal affordable daycare, real maternity benefits, high-quality free education, taxpayer-funded residence for the elderly, even the separate taxation of spouses were not gifts from the government to make me a servile, dependent on the state's largesse. Rather, the Nordic system is intentionally designed to take into account the specific challenges of modern life and give citizens as much logistical and financial independence as possible. This is actually the opposite of community-centered system, or socialism, or whatever you want to call it. This is also why the supposed social solidarity of people in the Nordic nations is not really as noble an undertaking as it is often made out to be.
Wow.
So what does that make you think?
It's, to me, what they've established now seems more like common sense, and we could use a little bit more of that.
I think she's trying to get down to the point of the right and a lot of Democrats like to use the word socialism as a slur because...
Yeah, well, it's easy to fall back on because they have no real justification behind it. And by saying that, it's just a cop-out. It's a cop-out for them.
They're trying to make it seem like what Bernie and like what AOC are fighting for and others is... just a total dependence on the government, and mm-hmm. you create just people who are lazy and need direction, when the opposite is true. of these Nordic societies where it is about supporting and giving help to these families who have babies. They give them so much time off. I won't even go into all the details, but they have so much time off to care for that child. And
to me, it's also a point of how you support your people, and your people make you the country that you are. So for instance, with America, we like to say we're number one, right? Mm-hmm. If we're number one, why don't we invest in our people to make us number one? For instance, furthering education opportunities, mm-hmm. making student loans a thing of the past, making things so that it is not such a fight to do basic things. Because at this point, anyone who's not from a super idyllic background, it is such a fight to just meet basic requirements to get where you need to be. And especially when, like, you brought up maternity leave, that it's basically a punishment. It's like it was a poor choice. You know, you made a poor choice to have a child. But it's also like, doesn't this country want to continue to grow and have youth to the next generation? Is the next generation not important?
We like to act as if we somehow value family more than other countries, and that's just not the case.
Oh, no, no, no.
We
quite the opposite, yeah.
Our views on, you know, the right to choose. People on the right want to act as if they're all about life and protecting that life. When essentially, they're basically saying, you know, you have to have this child whether you can afford it or not, or whether you have the ability or place to do that safely for the child. But they force you to have this thing, you know, they want to be able to force you to have this thing. But then once that baby is out,
oh, yeah, there's no fucks given anymore.
Nothing. There's no safety net for the children. No grace. So they don't care about that life. And as soon as that kid is 18, yes, send them overseas to fight and die in an endless war.
They really only care about the fetus. As soon as it's outside of the body, it suddenly... Well, that was your choice to have the kid, or that's unfortunate for them if they're poor. Well, guess they didn't use the capitalism's proper way. It sucks for them. Whatever.
This book, what you said about maternity leave, they said, while Nordic citizens often don't realize how good they have it, Americans seem not to realize how terribly they're being treated. According to a UN report from 2014 surveying 185 countries and territories, only two did not guarantee any paid maternity leave. Papua New Guinea and the United States.
Holy shit.
And, okay, so just listen to the other countries that we're listing here. So the United States is also one of only a handful of countries that don't guarantee their workers any paid time off for illness. Others include Angola, India, and Liberia.
Mm, wow.
That's
don't
embarrassing.
Really have...
That's so embarrassing.
Any words? I'm at a loss here.
I think what we're trying to get at is that I think a free market is great. I don't think capitalism is working for everybody. I think works better is a free market system, but I do think that our government's role isn't necessarily to rule our lives, but they're there to protect us and make sure that we have the tools that we need to succeed. So when you do have paid maternity leave and you do have great benefits, your people are happier, they're more productive, their children are better cared for, and in the end, their kids are set up for better success. So they're willing to pay more in taxes, and just even the section in this book I'm reading about maternity leave and just having a baby, it's amazing how some of these couples, they spend the hospital, they get a private room and they stay there for over a week, you know, to learn how to breastfeed and to get on their feet and get the basics done. And one of the couples had to pay, because they stayed a little extra, they paid $500.
Oh.
Another paid 50 some. So
wow. That's chump change considering what we would have to pay. I think it costs, I look up the accurate cost, but it's astronomical just to hold the baby right after it's been born. The skin-to-skin contact when they place the baby on the mother after it's been born, mm-hmm. That's a charge. There is a charge for that specific action.
Well, and it also makes sense that because our healthcare system is not about actually setting you up for success, you know, we want to pump you in and out as quickly as possible because it is nothing but a money-making machine. When you make it to where it's all about profit and getting people in and out as quickly as possible, you are sacrificing some of the needs and not setting your citizens up for success. When you invest in people, they are more productive. They are able to put their money back into the economy and support, you know, and invest in other things other than just these crippling debts that are should be just things Agreed. That are taken care of. Healthcare and school. And again,
happy people means happy country. Happy country means better country. So if you want to have bragging rights, why not invest in your own people?
So I'm why not saying...
make it so that it's easier for them to succeed and maybe eliminate some of the roadblocks, unnecessary roadblocks. It's not about saying, oh, we're going to give everybody handouts. It's eliminating unnecessary roadblocks so that people are more likely to succeed and put that back into the economy, back into the country.
I think a lot of people's misguided thoughts that in countries like that, these people are dependent on their government and have no individual aspirations. That's such a lie. Now, I'm not saying I think we need to be a socialist country, but we need to be more free market and more, yes, our government should take more responsibility for things, for healthcare. Because when you have individual small businesses, like the one I'm working for, small businesses are crippled by having to take care of the healthcare of their workers. And so you end up getting worse and worse. Let's just say that I decided to have a baby. Now, our company loves children and they love families, and I think they would try and help me as best I could, but they're not financially able to give me paid time off. It's just not an option for them. They would love to, I'm sure. It's just not something that they can feasibly. So it's crippling these small businesses that could grow, but now they have to be responsible for all this.
Well, and they're up against these big corporations who get tax write-offs, who get grants, who get assistance from the government, mm-hmm. who get write-offs from the government, and somehow they're supposed to keep up with them when they don't get the same assistance, the same support. Mm-hmm. And then our sister Heather, she had to deal with the same issue with her maternity leave. When she had Kira last year, she had to save up mm-hmm. money for the time that she was going to take off because she didn't get paid at all.
Yeah.
No support at all.
For a super religious, how do I say this? Our country is so steeped in this whole idea of Christianity and our love of family and how precious life is. Everything that we do says otherwise.
Reminds me of The Handmaid's Tale.
Yes.
How they emphasize so much importance and love and passion about these babies. But as soon as the babies get old enough to have form their own thoughts, fuck them.
Yeah.
They're like cattle, you know? They're not valued lives anymore. And it's when people throw around The Handmaid's Tale as an example, it's considered extreme example. I disagree. I feel, no, we don't have people wearing the exact same, like, red cloaks around and, you know, saying those phrases. And we don't have lockdowns where people aren't allowed to have their own lives. But the whole point on the value of life and the freedom of choice for women's bodies.
I'm going to hand you a few of these nuggets of her social media, because I think it's important, because even if I'm not into social media, The Guardian says that she has more than 2.1 million followers on Instagram and 500,000 on Facebook, but Twitter is where she dominates the conversation. So I picked out a few tweets that I think it just shows how she's not necessarily trying to engage with people, but she's using this platform as a way to pretty much put to bed people's ignorance. Like, she's like, nope, shut it down, shut it. So she says, in response to this dude was saying, at Ocasio-2018 refuses to respond to at Ben Shapiro's $10,000 debate offer. So Ben Shapiro, total turd of a human being. And she just said, just like catcalling, I don't owe a response to unsolicited requests from men with bad intentions. And also like catcalling, for some reason they feel entitled to one. I love that. She did not take his bait. She didn't.
Oh, yes.
She's not going to debate that guy because he's just so insignificant. He doesn't want to learn. He doesn't want to really get to the bottom of this. So she's just like, no, absolutely not.
I love that. Again, it's hard for me to get behind social media, but I get I understand.
So she says, whoever is coming at me in my mentions with a blue check when I haven't eaten in 3 hours, she says, and until more people start pitching in and holding people to account, I'm just going to let them have it. That's great. So the above tweet was just one of the first big examples of her doing this when she picked apart Ben Shapiro's strange and expensive debate challenge.
So random. And it's like, okay, she doesn't have to.
So then this all of these ridiculous tweets are coming from men. I'm sure there are some from women, but all of the most insane, stupid ones are from stupid men. So I don't know who this Charlie Kirk is, but he looks like an asshole. AOC, who pretends to be a champion of the people and believes the unemployment went down because we're taking two jobs, just posed in a photo shoot with a $3,500 outfit and $625 shoes, all while saying the rich have too much power. So then, she says, the alt-right doesn't seem to understand the concept of magazine shoots. You don't get to keep the clothes, duh. I don't pretend to fight for a living wage in Medicare for all. I do it. And get used to me slaying Luke's because I'm an excellent thrift shopper. Yes. It's
nice.
It's like when you go into Luke's. A photo shoot, they dress you. Like, of course they're going to put nice clothes on you. Are you stupid?
Yeah. You did not purchase those clothes yourself. You're not one of the rich. Their whole statement was so false, like acting as if she had purchased the clothes herself and was above the poor. No, she's kind of like right there with them, honestly.
She just says things like, oh no, they discovered our vast conspiracy to take care of children and save the planet. Laughing face. She's able to, in a way that I can't. She's concise. And it's just like the ultimate whip crack. It's just the best.
I'm very envious of that. Because I'm long-winded. You're like, okay, wrap it up. But she's like poignant. Like there. Yes. To the point.
Relatable. Funny. And like you said, so people, because she's a woman, they have nothing else to blast her on but what she's wearing. Obviously, we just saw that. But this response she has to this guy. Okay, so there's somebody took a picture of her backside. She's walking down the hall and it says, Hill staffer sent me this pic of Ocasio-Cortez they took just now. I'll tell you something, that jacket and coat don't look like a girl who struggles. And I mean, So she says, if I walked into Congress wearing a sack, they would laugh and take pictures of my backside. If I walk in with my best sale rack clothes, they laugh and take a picture of my backside. Dark hates light. That's why you tune it out. Shine bright and keep it pushing.
Hell yes.
Then, you know, in response to that ass, she says, oh, does @eScary think he can delete his misogyny without an apology? I don't think so. You're a journalist. Readers should know your bias. Because he did try and delete this later because it looked so bad. But it's like, no, you have to answer for your ass foolishness.
Exactly. Because just because you delete it doesn't mean you actually think it was wrong. You're just embarrassed and you want to
backtrack.
Yeah. Hold you accountable.
I'm so impressed by her ability to drown out the stupidity, and she may address it. Oh, yeah. I just don't know how she has the energy to do it.
Yeah, because it's a nonstop job.
Yeah, that's a not. And I think she said she's been trying to distance herself from social media. Like on the weekends, she doesn't look at any of it. And she knows it's part of her job to stay engaged and to do these things, but for her own personal use, she's trying to minimize it because it is so negative. That's why I had to stop it. It's not nobody was picking on me the way they're picking on her. I'm not going to try and make it similar. I just got sick of it because I thought it was just a waste of my time. Now I'm reading. Now I'm talking to you. I mean, things that used to take up my time and attention, like the likes or a particular person who's been on my nerves lately, sending all of these really insensitive things. It's talking about how many likes they get on a meme they created. That's totally ridiculous. I'm thinking that's what's got you excited.
Yeah, and that's another thing. I'm not calling out memes, but I'm just so annoyed by what my feed is flooded with. There's just like there's hardly any real content anymore, and it's just constant spreading of misinformation, and memes are notorious for spreading misinformation because they come across as funny and likable.
And anyone can make them.
Anyone. And it, you know, people share that shit because they think it's, oh, harmless and funny, but it feeds people's subconsciouses. They're flipping through their phone and then they're just flooding their mind with misinformation. And I'm over it. I'm fucking over it.
So kind of getting back to the essence of why I think we need more AOCs and more Ilhan Omars, I think that it's important that we have more grassroots movements and more people who are coming from the actual trenches, who yes. know what it's like to suffer and work hard and support their family and be...
And the reason for doing that is to support families, is to help serve the people.
Kind of like that mindset of people who are sort of pushing back against getting rid of like student loan debt and tuition-free colleges. This pushback tends to come from people who went to school and they've already paid off their student loans or they paid for colleges they went. That's great for them. I'm really glad that they could do that. Not everybody has that ability to do it. It doesn't mean that person is less of a hard worker. Their opportunities are different. Some people's parents can pay for their school. Everybody comes from a different background. But mm-hmm. people who I've spoken with who kind of think they have a bit of hesitancy behind it is that, well, where do I get mine? If you get your student loans absolved because of this, which I don't think is going to happen now because looks like Sleepy Joe is going to be the guy who's going to come in and underwhelm us. Oh, John Adarola in the damage report put it beautifully when he said that, you know, he's paid off most of his student loans and his debt, or maybe even all of it, I don't remember. But he said that if it came along where someone who is way wealthier than him got their student loans absolved, he's not going to have a conniption about it. He's not going to feel jealous, you know. Sure, he wishes that same opportunity could have been his, but he is not going to begrudge others who can have that opportunity. He doesn't want other people to go through the same suffering he went through. Like, why would he do that just where it
that
felt
seems to
fair?
Be a boomer mentality where it's like, well, I had to pay for my college, you should have to pay too. It's a part of the process.
Well,
and it's
boomers,
like,
college was also a lot less expensive. Yeah. As was life.
You work a summer job and you get to pay for your college.
You could work at a bank and support your family. But if I was working at a bank right now, I still couldn't support myself. In this place I live where the cost of living and providing for myself is so high, but the waging income gap is so skewed, it hasn't gone up with the cost of living. So
it hasn't gone up for years. The wage has not gone up as cost of living, and not just cost of living, but just cost of everything mm-hmm. has gone up. Every single year, prices go up, except for wages. Mm-hmm. But then people want to argue, if we raise the wages, then cost of living is going to go up again. It's going to go up again regardless. Mm-hmm. It's time that you meet that, cut the gap out and bring them back up to an even scale so that as it continues to rise, so do the wages, and start that process over again from scratch, because there's a serious discrepancy between the two.
I think we need to take the opportunity we're faced with right now with this coronavirus. And I'd like to think that all of what's happening now is a wake up call to, I know it won't be for everybody, but to as many people as possible, that our values need to shift. It is not about bailing out these big companies like Boeing, who don't actually need to be bailed out. They even said when Trump offered to bail them out, as long as they got like a 10 to 20% profit share, they're like, now that you put it that way, like there's strings attached. No, we'd rather not have your money. If they needed it that badly, they would just accept it and say, yes, deal. So our people, our citizens are what is important. Not big corporate interests, not big business, not money in the government. I think we're going to start realizing that we are focusing back on families. We're focusing back on how we interact with each other and how we are totally unprepared for this and how we can prepare better. So maybe we'll start to shift away from so much money in our prison industrial complex or our investment in war and our military budget spending. I think we need to shift our values over to the things that affect our communities the most.
Agreed.
We should use this as an opportunity to refocus ourselves on what's important, and that's each other and not big money interests. Exactly. That's just my idea of a perfect case scenario here.
I love that dream, and I share that dream.
Yeah, let's get our reprioritize. This is a good wake-up call. And, you know, let's check in with all these people like at the 700 Club, who like to spew to their listeners that, let's say, kind of like a certain person who lives in Tennessee mentioned recently to me, you know, they live in Franklin, where it's the nicer area, the snooty end of town, I think is how they said it. And the tornadoes that just hit Nashville kind of cleared out some of the riffraff who just, you know, they should just find somewhere else to be. Let's just say the 700 Club likes to talk about big disasters like that as being God's way of punishing, kind of like the flood, even though in the Bible, God said he would never punish the world with a natural disaster like the flood again. 700 Club likes to think that it is a way to punish the, you know, people who aren't super religious and maybe they're poor and usually they're not white. That's God's way of punishing them and those people. But what would they have to say about this scenario? Because this doesn't seem to discriminate. This virus doesn't discriminate against rich, poor, black, white, brown, whatever. So how would they paint this? Is this God punishing all of us for being evil people? Or is it just, it's just a virus? It's just something that's a hoax? Or
maybe God's punishing us for trying to get Trump out of office because he's the chosen one.
Okay.
Because it's right around election time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we, maybe. Oh, I forgot. We created this whole pandemic to undermine Trump and make his election bid a joke. But wasn't it already a joke? Even though I fully believe he will get reelected if Joe Biden is our constituent that we decide upon. And when I say we decide upon, is it really we that we're deciding this? Or has it been our news media that has been telling us that we have to choose someone electable to beat Trump? Our number one priority is beating Trump. So we need to elect someone who's not going to rock the boat too much.
I want to know how many people have their opinion based off of their research that is not Facebook and that is not media directed. Mm-hmm. That's not research. That is taking the bait of what media, that media distortion is so real, so prevalent, and it's overwhelming how much just the news can just manipulate what you think are facts, what you think is correct, and they'll leave out important information that will totally change the story that they're trying to spin. They leave out very important facts, and they will only focus on certain things. Like, for instance, if say Bernie and Biden are in this debate together, right? Mm-hmm. They'll only focus on the top things that Biden said that really spoke to voters, but it'll maybe be like a 2.2 second segment out of the whole debate, and they'll totally leave out all of the information Bernie was dominating with. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. They'll take a little piece out of something. They'll spin their own story, and it influences so many people, and it really pisses me off. And it's everywhere. It's in the news. It's on Facebook, and Facebook is where so many people rely on their information.
I just wish that we could unplug ourselves. And I feel the most unplugged I've ever been, which is really where I'd like to stay, where I'm challenging myself on some of my ideas and, like, we're going to talk about the Electoral College. But I want to make sure that before I even speak on it, that I've done a little bit more research and I'm not just talking out of my ass or just my preconceived notions. I want to make sure that I'm not making things up and that I'm giving my views on real facts, not on something that I heard. And I think that's important because we grew up being influenced by our parents. Julia and I had parents who are extremely right-wing, very, very bigoted, very pretty much puppets of their parties. And I think the only thing my mom votes on is if someone is pro-life or not. So Trump's going to get her vote, even though before this, he was never even a Republican. But I think we have to stop letting the news tell us that we have to vote for somebody who's electable. And you know who's electable? whoever we elect. So exactly. Do your research. Decide upon the things that are the core values that are most important to you.
Fight the urge to be so damn impressionable. Mm-hmm. Don't be impressionable. Do your research. Lux agrees. Can you hear her? She's whining.
She's seconding
that. She's like, well, seriously, guys. Don't listen to the media.
And even media that sort of seems a little bit more to reflect your viewpoint, don't let that lull you into complacency either.
No, because then you'll fall into your own side of propaganda. Because, I mean, propaganda has different extremes, different levels. But it's all the same. Any type of information that is presented in a way to influence and did not present all of the facts and try to get you on a certain side, that's propaganda to me. And that's even with your own news outlets. Like, I have to be careful where I get my news from. Sometimes I have to look from multiple sources to get an idea of the truth, because you can start to disillusion yourself. Not to say that news outlet is wrong, but even they have a way of presenting facts in a way that favors their position as well. And it's subconscious too. So be careful, be aware.
Julia.
Yes.
I think that it is a fucking miracle that you and I, and I think maybe Skylar,
yes,
have been able to research, do a little bit of digging, push back against certain things, which is why I think that things like racism and bigotry, you're not born with it. It is a social mm-hmm. creation. It is something that your environment will shape. And of course, you know, we all have things that we're bigoted about or, you know, definitely not quite informed about. But I think questioning and being like, well, why? Is that really the case? Or is that really yeah. fair? And
not accepting things at face value, asking the questions, pushing back. And people take that as opposition, but it's just saying, no, why?
I think it is an age-old misnomer that we use as a society. I think sometimes it's applicable, but sometimes it's not. Let's just use this example of this old man. Let's just say this old man is at a work party and he pats a younger coworker's ass and says something slightly sexual. Now, most people are going to say that's unacceptable in the workplace. You know, we've all been informed, we've all read the forms that talk about harassment, what's acceptable and not acceptable. Now, yes, this man grew up in a time where, like in Mad Men, women were just objects for you to use or boss around, but mm-hmm. we're in this age now where we are learning and progressing, hopefully. Switch that to a situation where this old man says something really racist to this guy. Everyone is quick to run to the old man's defense and say, well, it's just the time period he grew up in. It's just how he was raised. But I would like to push back against that, because we were raised to hate gay people. I was told I couldn't marry my black neighbor because he was a different color, and it was all these different things. And I always ask the question, why? I never bought into it. And I don't know why or what made me buy into that. It wasn't a rebellion that I just wanted to irk my parents by dating someone.
No, because it made no damn sense.
So you can be raised. I mean, we were raised in the Bible Belt. We were raised in the perfect petri dish of hate to mirror that hate. And then if we move somewhere.
But you can't use that as an excuse for anyone's behavior, because at the end of the day, you're a human being with a conscience and the ability to make your own decisions. You have your own free will and ability to reason mm-hmm. and use common sense. Regardless of where you come from, you are in control of your actions. That does not, your past is not an excuse for your current behavior at all.
So, and that's the thing, is when all of these movements started, let's just say the suffrage movement, there were people who pushed it back against it, men and women. But there were people who thought, this system isn't right. This system isn't serving everyone to provide us all with a fair shot. And we all have that ability to look outside of our learning bubble and see what's right and what's wrong. And I hate hearing people use that excuse. We have to hold ourselves to a higher standard, because if you are living in this current world and you're older, you may have been raised in a certain environment, but there are so many things out there in our media that are having, like, gay couples are now on television, and we have all of this inundation of what's acceptable now, and they're still holding on to these archaic values. No, we don't get they don't get a pass on hate. I don't think that is correct.
No. And I understand that people should have the ability to believe whatever they want to believe and practice their faith however they see fit. However, when any of that stuff veers into the realm of hate rhetoric, anything that is not building other people up, and it's targeted against some type of person or peoples, I think that's unacceptable. People should not be afraid. People should not be targeted. People should not be ostracized just because of a belief. I think that's where we err.
So, on that note, I think it's a good place to wrap up. But let's wrap up AOC and say, for me, I want to be more like AOC. The older I get, the more disheartened I get by the system that we are in. And I feel like I've fought for Bernie the first time around, and I've really invested in Bernie this time around. I hope that what's happening in the world right now can be a catalyst for bringing him back up. I think he's going to, I think he should stay in this race until we can see at this point where we actually are. And reassess.
Especially on the side of healthcare, with everything else going on right now. Mm-hmm. Perfect platform.
Yes.
It's like right now, people more than ever understand how important it is to be covered.
And if any of you guys donate to whatever political party or political person, you know, whoever your candidate of choice is, if you are donating to their campaign in any way, shape, or form, can I challenge you to look into that a little bit further? Because I have been donating every week to Bernie whenever I can, different amounts, whatever I can handle at the moment. But now he is not accepting donations for his campaign. All the money that he raises is going towards 5 different relief groups forgot what these relief groups are. I'll have to look them up. I heard them mentioned on the Young Turks and I thought it was fantastic. But he is really encouraging us to invest in those things because those are more important than a political campaign.
Oh yeah.
And I find that.
And that says a lot about who he is and what he really stands for and who you'd want to be leading.
So what are your values, guys?
Right.
What do you want our legacy to be? And don't make a decision based on the news telling you you have to vote for someone who's electable because they worked for Obama. Let's start to put our values first and say, we can do better. We need someone energetic. We need someone with good, not just good intentions, but a real plan, some real energy.
I've got a challenge as well. So I notice with COVID-19, it's really shown more than ever how ignorant people are about a certain issue until it happens mm-hmm. to them.
Right.
Or a family member, someone close to them. Like these people who were throwing COVID parties in Kentucky, and then one of them got it.
Mm-hmm.
And then now they regret it. And now they're like, oh, I'm so sorry, guys. Oh, now you're sorry. Now that you've got it. And you're like, oh, it does suck. Fuck you. No, I challenge everyone to make your decisions and establish your values based upon the idea that this is happening to someone you love and you care about. Because if you don't, it's just, what is it?
It's a pandemic of idiocy.
It's not tangible to you. When you don't imagine it as a reality, your reality, potential reality, you suddenly don't care about it. But everything is possible. It could be your reality. So make your decisions based off everything being your reality.
So do your homework. Wash your hands. Social distance.
Do it.
Don't throw COVID parties.
Don't do it.
And don't just think about yourself. Think about the risk you could pose to someone older that you love or that someone else loves. It's not just about you. That's what a community
establish your
is.
Values and hold fast to them.
Be better, guys. We have to be better.
It reminds me of Melania Trump's little group that she's got. Is it called Be Best?
Oh, stop. I don't mention her name right now. We were ending on a high, Juliet. Like, we were ending on something aspirational. And, it's and then you mentioned.
Grammatically incorrect. Be best.
Well, Julia, it has been wonderful. I love seeing your face.
I love seeing your face.
Look at you. You're so pretty. And I'm so sweaty.
No, I'm sweaty too. My upper lip is just like glistening. Yeah, they're like little droplets on my upper lip. Well, and it's, you guys didn't need to know that.
Go outside, Julie. Get some fresh air. I'm going to go see my horse and tell him I love him.
Give him kisses for me.
I will. Yeah. Well, you have a good day. And guys, don't forget to check out our social medias.
That's right. You can go to our webpage, www.thefamilytiespodcast.com. And it's got the links to all of our social media platforms. And there are blog posts. Get everything. All the information you need is right there.
Heck yeah. Go join the family. Love you guys. Bye. Thank you.